We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
On today's episode of Green with Envy, the Bulls look ready to blow it up. Should Brad Stevens make a call about Alex Caruso? Let's check in on the bench. How are we feeling about the bench 11 games into the season? And of course, go grab your sunglasses. It's in-season tournament Friday. All that and more coming up next here on Green with Envy. What up, what up, what up? Welcome back to another edition of Green with Envy. And man, it feels good to be back on the mic. As always, it's your boy Will Ware checking in. How you doing? How you living? Joining me today, as always, to complete the holy triumvirate that is the three-man weave. First up, we have my best friend, co-host, and the coach of our podcast, the one and only Greg Benakis. What's going on, my G?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Ready to talk ball.
Let's get it going. And of course, to round it out here, we have our podcasting cousin from across the pond, the leader of the Taylor gang, the one and only Adam Taylor. What's popping, Adam?
What's popping? Now, I'm good, man. I'm good living life. How's it going, y'all?
See, it's I tried to give you
a sounded like Jackie Chan in Rush Hour. Y'all?
You understand the words that are coming out
y'all.
Of my mouth.
Y'all, what's this? Camel's hump. Camel's hump.
Jellied eel was in number two, right? I fucking love Rush Hour.
I was going to say, real quick, can we do a quick ranking of the Rush Hour movies? I think it's pretty simple, but I want to make sure we're all on the same page.
2-1-3.
Adam, any disagreement?
No, 2-1-3 works for me.
Okay. That feels like one of the few trilogies that it's just cemented in stone. Like it's almost impossible to have a different ranking than 2-1-3. If you have a different ranking than 2-1-3, I think we need to look at you as if you're, you know, drinking strawberry milk with Adam on the couch or something.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with strawberry milk. Stop coming for me. I'll tell you another one that I've got 2-1-3, the Friday movies. So Friday after next is number one. No, sorry, next Friday is number one, Friday is number two, Friday after next is number three. I don't know if y'all have seen
that. That's a hot take. I think that's pretty equivalent, though, to like the Austin Powers movies. I think most people would probably go just 1-2-3 with Austin Powers, but I personally would go 2-1-3.
I'll go 2-1-3. I go 2-1-3. I think 2-1-3 is the more popular opinion with Austin Powers.
Number two has Felicity Shagwell. She shags wild by name and shags very wild by name.
Maybe it's because I was obsessed with Liz Hurley. I don't know.
Probably. You did have a big thing for Liz Hurley back in the day, but I think two is the one that, like, for me, that felt like one of the first, like, I was of age blockbusters that everyone watch, like, regardless, you know, whether you were at the time when we came out, we might have been, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, somewhere in that range. And like, also people that were, you know, older were like, everyone watched that movie. Like, no matter where you went, like, people saw that movie. Like, that was such a big hit. I would say 2-1-3 for that one as well would be the popular one. To your point, there could be some debate and you'd entertain it. Rush Hour, there is no entertaining the debate.
It's Friday, I think it's, for me personally, it's 1-2-3. For Friday. Two's good. I think two's good.
So I think I'm with you, of course, you're the same fucking brain. But like I think 1-2-3 is how I would go. But part of it's just because one, is so iconic. Like, I think there's a chance two actually might be better than one, but one is so iconic that I think it kind of supersedes it.
Right, but then in one, you have Smokey, and two, you have Mike Epps, right? So it's Chris Tucker and Mike Epps. Like, Smokey's probably the most iconic character in Friday, right? So that's why I think you got to go with one over two.
Like, okay, so I think number two for me is more quotable than number one. So everyone who follows me on social media knows for a while I had a dickhead neighbor, right? Like, she was just... There was some activities going on that I was not pleased about.
Remember, we're recording now, Adam.
That's fine. I'm not using names. And I, every time she used to pull up, me and the wife used to be like, Day-Day, that crazy bitch back again. So like, it was just a quote we used a bunch, right? But then I use from number one, where the dad was driving and he needs to shit because he's got too much hot sauce. And he's like, get the fuck out of my face, Taylor. So I use that a bunch.
That's one? I thought that was two.
Is that number two?
I think that's two when he pulls up.
So this is what I'm getting at. It's more quotable. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I quote more from number two. I think that's probably why I hold it in a higher regard.
I feel like we're going to have to put a poll out on this one.
Yeah, we'll put a poll out on this for those
listening. And then we'll put a poll, chocolate milk, regular
milk. We got to move off the milk.
You're just hating, man, because I weren't down on the chocolate milk train. Okay, it's okay. I get it.
Hey, you know who's offended by that, Adam? One and only Al Horford. He was the sponsor of chocolate milk. who's strawberry milk sponsor?
Me?
Yeah, go. I gotta roll with Al Horford on that one. I'm sorry, Adam. Love you, guy. But I'm gonna roll with Al Horford on the sponsorship of the milks here. But no, for real, it's really good to be back with you guys here. I've been off for week plus here, traveling, dealing with a little bit of COVID. Finally came and got your boy here. But we're back. We're feeling good. And so let's talk some hoop here. And I think one topic that we've talked about kind of in our group chat, you know, we had a little meeting the other day, this came up, feels like a relevant topic right now is I want to talk about the Celtics bench, but also potential ways that the bench can be influenced here. And it might be a matter of timing. So as we're recording this, you know, multiple reports have been starting to kind of trickle their way out that the Bulls are a few losses away from maybe just blowing this whole thing up, which, to be honest, I feel like we all have seen that coming since the middle of the offseason, since maybe last year. You know, they had one good month with a healthy Lonzo Ball, and it's not really been great since. So reports are they're looking to potentially blow it up. Zach LaVine, DeMar DeRozan, Nikola Vucevic, all of them on the table. None of them, they don't really concern the Celtics directly. However, a guy that could concern the Celtics directly, and I know it has been the apple of the eye of not only just some of the hosts on this show, but Celtics fans in general, would be one Alex Caruso. So let's start here, and then we can also work the Celtics benches, because I think that's an important part of this discussion. But let's start with Alex Caruso. And Greg, I'll go to you here, because I know this is your guy. So I feel like it's not even a question that if Alex Caruso is available, your answer is going to say, go get me Alex Caruso, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, when you already have Jrue Holiday and Derek White, and we've seen what they can do as a defensive pairing in the backcourt, if you add Alex Caruso to that mix and you now have arguably three of the top five point of attack defenders in basketball at the guard position, I think you kind of got to do it. And I think Caruso, although he's not going to solve any like shooting issues off the bench, you know, there's also... you know, something to be said about insurance, because right now, if, you know, Jrue Holiday goes down, I think we can figure out a way to survive, right? If Derek White goes down, we can figure out a way to survive. If you have Caruso, you kind of just plug him in to one of those spots, and defensively, you don't miss a beat. There's an argument to be made that he's the best of the three defenders. I personally think it's Holiday, but there are a lot of people that think Caruso is like one of the best of, like, maybe the best wing defender in basketball, and he can guard up a little bit as well. Like, he'll guard Kevin Durant, he'll guard people like that, because he's so handsy on defense. And I just think, you know, especially with that new press that we're throwing out there with the full court press, I think he would thrive in that. You see a lot of Jrue Holiday playing free safety on defense these days, where like they're just letting him roam and just wreak havoc. Like, him and Caruso, just the defensive IQ that would be on the court would be insane. So although he does look like Elmer Fudd, and Elmer Fudd wasn't a big member of the Space Jam squad, I think Alex Caruso would be a great addition to this team.
I like Alex Caruso. So while you were talking, and I like the Elmer Fudd reference too, while you were talking, I went on to One of my favorite NBA websites for stats, I don't know if you guys have ever used it, dunksandfreeze.com. No? Okay.
Not familiar. Shout out to them, though. Free publicity.
Yeah, I mean, I learned about them through Zach Lowe, so it's not like we're giving them anything they haven't already got.
Okay, so they've gotten better publicity. Anyways.
So here it is, right? So it all operates in estimated plus minus, which is a player impact metric that basically goes from -8, bad, to +8, ridiculous. You can get it in offense, defense, and then an overall EPM. Defensively, Caruso is literally a top 6 guy every season for the last 4 years. He was in the 96th percentile for defense while he was with the Lakers. Then he went to the 99th, then to the 94th. Last season, he was 100th percentile, so he was one of the best defensive guards. Obviously, this is done by position. This year, we're not there yet. We don't have the sample size. But if you look at the graph, just where he is, this little dotted line here is your average, right? So this is kind of, and then obviously you have like players above it, how high up they went and blah, blah, blah. He's trended up every year for the last few years, had a bit of a dip, and then he went straight back up to like the best defensive season he ever had while playing on arguably one of the worst constructed teams in the East. Not talent-wise, but construction-wise, right? I think that Caruso is that type of guy, as Greg said, you can plug in and play. But more importantly, I feel like he's the type of guy that will thrive being around stars that take a bit of pressure off him. He's never going to have been on a team as defensively sound as what Boston is, where he isn't the only defensive point of attack guy. He isn't the only guy that's anchoring a defense. He's just part of a bigger machine. Mm-hmm. And I think that could take him to another level again. Like, in terms of defense, offensively, the touches just won't be there really for him the way they are in Chicago. But defensively, I think that it could bring the best out of him.
We keep talking about defense, and I think that's probably the thing as we're talking this through right now on air, is like with Caruso, we are leaning into defense, right? We're saying this is going to be the identity of this team. And we've kind of seen that throughout the first few games of the season, is the defensive potential of this team is special. It's a very special defensive identity. And that's something that Mazzulla got a lot of heat for last year, is that Mazzulla ball just focused so heavily on offense, and we didn't have a defensive identity despite having talented defensive players. So if we want to win a championship and we're, you know, weighing the pros and cons of adding somebody at the deadline, and should it be an offensive minded player versus a defensive minded player, if you bring in Caruso, you are saying our defensive identity is what makes us special, right? We have all the talent in the world on offense, but adding Caruso, every single team would look at the Celtics and be like, that's the best defensive team in basketball.
So I can't disagree with anything that you guys are saying. I like Caruso as well. So I'm not even going to try and go down, you know, down that road. But I do want to try and look at this from a different perspective. And so, you know, one, there's the offensive perspective, which I think we'll get to here in a second. But Greg, when you were talking, you mentioned, you know, right now, if Holiday goes down, we can probably get by, right? You have White, you have JB, you have different ways that you can kind of plug and play that. Of course, Caruso, just don't miss a beat. You're right back to, you know, kind of where this team is now. That, for me, you know, you're doubling, maybe even tripling down on a strength by bringing in Alex Caruso. And I think for me, especially when I look at the Celtics, you know, from an asset standpoint, they don't have a lot of moves left, right? So I think after the Bucks made their move, one of the things that you could look at them and say is, okay, cool, that's your last move. They have zero moves left to make. The Celtics, this is part of what people loved about the Jrue Holiday move, is they still have assets. They still have first-round picks. They still have second-round picks. What they don't have is a lot of salary to really go out in trades of guys that you're going to feel comfortable sending out. So if you're making this move, because Caruso is certainly in the range of guys where you can put together Pritchard, even with the new deal, and, you know, it's kind of that in-between state, you can still put together Pritchard, one, two more guys, boom, you're there. You know, or even if you somehow, you know, took Pritchard away and say you're trying to get to 9, 10 million, you can still put together 3-4 guys, get to that money, and get out. But then that's really basically your last move. Because one thing you have to remember, that if they are to make this move after the season, so after this trade deadline, basically their ability to aggregate any type of salaries together for any move is done, because they're going to be a second tax apron team starting next year. So that's over with. So this is the last time that you can actually pile together multiple of those small salaries without going ahead and trading Al Horford or trading Derek White and going to get somebody. So I just think you have to be very strategic. Not saying Caruso's not that guy, but to the point of plugging and playing, like, to me, I think you have to take a stronger look as rather than doubling or tripling on a strength, where can you fortify what you envision could be a potential weakness? And for me, I think that's where, you know, with Caruso, I think this early in the season, I would say I would not do that trade. Then again, this might be your only chance to do it, depending on how quickly the Bulls break this up. But I think if I'm the Celtics, I would prefer to even look at a short-term deal that maybe fortifies the front court a little bit more. Because to your point, Greg, if Holiday goes down, not great, but I feel like we can sustain. If Kristaps or Al Horford goes down, which is probably more likely given, you know, the just the setup of Kristaps' history, Al's age, you know, if one of them goes down, I feel way less better about this team being able to survive in big series that are going to feature Joel Embiid, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Bam Adebayo, Nikola Jokic, when you get further and further down the line. So for me, that would be my biggest hesitation in going the Caruso route versus, and to be honest, it's pretty bleak. I've looked at the names.
What I was going to say is like Caruso's available. Right. That's why we're talking about Caruso. He's on the market. You have to go try and force some big man trade that like maybe
might not exist. That might not exist. Right. That's the counterpoint.
And Caruso will play. You put Caruso on the Celtics, he'll get 20 minutes a game. You bring in a third big, you're just getting depth. I don't necessarily know that they're going to actually be in the rotation. Caruso, for as long as the Celtics are playing basketball this season, Alex Caruso is going to be in the rotation. You trade for a third big and that's your last move. You're really just saying, oh, this is insurance in case Horford or Kristaps goes down, right? But you might not actually have a guy as talented as Caruso who could earn minutes in the normal rotation. That would be my pushback on that.
I think the only thing I'd kind of do there is, okay, so say that Stevens is like, Caruso's nice in that, but we're stacked at the guard position. We're happy with the rotation we've got. Pritchard starting to figure things out again, hitting his shots. You know, he's providing impact. If we want a big, do we wait and see what deals the Bulls make and then see what, because big people, there's going to be centers involved in these trades most likely, because they see who shakes loose that way. Who does Chicago get that they don't really want? And then what can we do to get them for cheaper than what we would have got them originally? You know, you don't know who's going to end up being sent there. If the Lakers trade for LaVine, who are they sending out? Is there somebody that could come in that is more of a four but can slide up and play some small ball five that could earn some minutes that isn't young enough that Chicago are going to want to keep hold of? And there's a few teams around the league that could end up putting trade packages together for someone from Chicago that might shake somebody loose. I'm not sure who, though, because any, as Greg said, any impactful big is probably signed up and staying exactly where they are.
Well, this is the biggest point. Like, just around, just looking at, like, the salaries that even in, like, you know, removing any, you know, young players that fit in that $8 to $10 million range, it's a grim list of names, right? Like, Alex Caruso is probably the name that you're going to look at. And, like, just in a vacuum, this is easily the best player at that. You know, even if they all became available, minus those rookies, you know, like, he's going to be the guy that is going to be the most talented, to your point, have a chance in the rotation. But, like I said, I think you do have to be careful because it is basically your last move that you're making. But I think in a vacuum, there's no way that it's not Alex Caruso. But I think with that, I think that also is a good time for us to transition a little bit, and we can mix this in here to kind of assess where we're at with this bench, right? Because it started off the first three games, oh my God, no one on the bench is good. I think that's kind of calmed down a little bit, but there are still certainly some questions when it comes to the Celtics bench. So let's take our first break here real quick, and then we'll come back and let's dig into where we're at with this bench.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? you won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. So we're talking about the Celtics bench here, you know, 11 games into the season. And I think this is an appropriate time to talk about the bench, especially coming off, you know, that Philly win on Wednesday night, which, by the way, Adam Noah did a great job recapping. So if you're listening to us on YouTube, scroll down, you can go ahead and take a look at that. Or if you're on the feed, go ahead and scroll back. We got that set up for you as well. But I think that game was really important because even though the bench guys jumped into starters minutes, I don't know if you want to look at it differently. You know, those are still your bench players, but no JB, no KP, you know, Sam Hauser and Al Horford jump back into the starting lineup. And when you look at this bench, you know, I think Sam Hauser so far, he's been just as expected or maybe even exceed expectations in the, you know, throughout this first sample. And then you start looking at Horford, Pritchard, Kornet. Those have been kind of the main guys that we're looking at on the bench here. And, you know, let me ask you this here. Let's start with Adam. You know, I look at kind of what we have right now from these bench players. And Horford, despite making those four threes last game, still shooting sub 30% from three. Pritchard, 33-23 shooting splits from the field and from three. If those guys are just shooting better from three, do we just feel better about everything that's going on with the Celtics bench?
I mean, kind of, but kind of not as well, right? Like, one of my biggest concerns is having somebody there that's going to be able to do more than just score. Everybody knows who listens to the show how I'm not a fan of single skill guys. Don't really see the value in them in the postseason. Horford is definitely not a single skill guy. Pritchard is proving that he can create a little bit. When he drives the lane and gets under the rim and then does what's called gnashing, so he dribbles under the rim and back out, he's creating good looks for others, especially off of secondary cuts. Hauser is a quintessential 3-and-D guy at this point. I don't think anybody can argue that Hauser is a 3-and-D wing. I feel quite confident. I think I'm not as confident in Kornet as what I am in Pritchard, in Hauser, in Horford. I feel like Pritchard can hold his own defensively as much as any smaller guard can. Like, he's not going to be a high-level defender, but he's a passable defender. You feel comfortable if he's switched on to somebody. He's going to fight and give everything he's got to stay in front of his guy. I think the only concern I've got is at that big position. And then if you need, like, forward depth, wing depth, but in the front court, right? Front court, wing depth, I'm not very comfortable there at all. Outside of Sam Hauser, I've got no comfort level there. So I think that the top three guys in that bench rotation are fine. It's everybody that falls after those three guys, like your insurance guys. That's where my concerns are.
Well, that's where, you know, you talk about the front court depth there. I think that's where Hauser's kind of impressed me the most, is because he's big and he is a passable defender to good defender at this point with Hauser's ability to move his feet. He's also a willing rebounder. He's normally in the right spot and just using his length on defense because he is 6'8", 6'9", right? Sam Hauser's not a 6'6" shooting guard. He's a big kid. So I think that's what I've actually been really impressed with Hauser's ability to stand up in switches against bigger people. He's been able to navigate screens better than I thought. I think he takes a lot of what he's able to do well on offense and is able to translate it onto the defensive end. And I think, you know, the more that we take advantage of the skill sets that they excel in as well. And that's a Missoula thing. You see me tweeting all the time, weaponize Sam Hauser. I think that if you have Sam Hauser on the court, he can't just be standing in the corner shooting three-pointers. I think that's a very good skill to have. That's what Grant Williams could do last year, but Sam Hauser is such a more versatile shooter than Grant Williams is, right? You can have him coming off pin downs, double staggers, like all this stuff, run some floppy for him. There's so many things that you can do with Sam Hauser. You can also weaponize Sam Hauser as a screener. And that's something that I want to see a lot more out of Sam Hauser, is screening to cause havoc, because you do not want to leave him. If he's the screener in an action, there's going to be a lot of confusion and people are going to be freaking out. If he runs a ghost screen into a flare, right? If they run something like that, that's going to be a big problem for some teams as they try to communicate and navigate those screens. So I think that before we make or feel like we need to make a move for Caruso, even though I would love to have Caruso on the team, you know, there are ways that we can take what we already have on the bench and just utilize it in a more effective way, a more intentional way. So it's not just, hey, give the ball to Tatum, let him do everything, and then you just play off of him. Like, let's try and do what other teams do with their bench players, which is why, like, the Heat. You see the Heat, man. Like, the way that they weaponize Duncan Robinson. They're looking good. The way that they weaponize Duncan Robinson, there's no reason why the Celtics can't do that with Sam Hauser.
Yeah, Duncan Robinson last night coming off the bounce, hitting guys, going through the lane last night, looking like a different Duncan Robinson. But to the point of the Celtics bench right now, I think, Greg, your last point there is where, for me, making a move, I think it's too early. You know, I know this, like I said, you never know how long that window's open to get a guy like Alex Caruso. So if it is actually open, which, you know, we haven't seen the fire sale start in Chicago yet, but you kind of have to be ready to make that quick call, even if it is too early, so you have to be kind of preparing for it. But I think for me right now, I feel pretty confident in at least that top three, like you said, Adam. You know, the Horford, the three-point shot, Noah started to go down this route the other day, which I think maybe we could talk about here for a second. You know, did Al, who just does tend to play pretty well, you know, I think he showed why he's going to be still super important for this team in big moments, you know, in that game. That was the quintessential, hey, don't forget or ever think about writing off Al Horford for this season. In big moments, this is going to be games where he's going to have impact like this, and where he might even be more valuable than Kristaps in small select circumstances because of what he can do. But you and Noah started talking about, you know, does Al need to maybe get more of a feel? Maybe that's what made him so comfortable. Because we forget, right? Al's been in the league, 17 years, some whatever crazy number it is. This is the first time he's ever come off the bench in his entire career. Certainly wasn't doing it in Florida when he was winning championships either. So within the last 20 years, this is the first time this man's ever come off the bench. And so to not expect there to be some hiccups into figuring out, you know, like you mentioned, Adam, the other day, like, you have to kind of not just be game ready at tip off, but be limber, right? There's a difference to being hyped up and ready to jump into action versus staying limber and then 7 minutes into the game, then you're trying to get yourself into that rhythm and motion. So, you know, I think with Al, it's just like some bumps that you're going to expect with him, you know, making this transition. And so from those top three, I think I feel really comfortable that I wouldn't feel the need to make a move right now. And you know, even a guy like Luke, I thought Luke played pretty well the other night against Philadelphia. So, you know, from a bench perspective, I think it's something that, because the season has been such a great start, and obviously the top five are just insane with the plus minus, anything you look at with that top five, it's just, you know, it's hard not to text your friends that aren't Celtics fans and say, guys, have you seen our starting five? It's pretty fucking terrifying. And they can't help but agree, because that's just what it is.
Will, can I just push back on something real quick, or just ask a clarifying question? So you said you feel comfortable with the top three. Right now, you're comfortable with Peyton Pritchard?
I'm comfortable giving him more leeway, like giving him more of a chance. Not necessarily, like, if this is the definitive Peyton Pritchard we're getting, no, I'm not comfortable with that. But I do like that, you know, right now he's getting 20 minutes a game. Right. He talked a lot about, I just want to like find my role and whatever my role is and exceed in that role, be a star in that role. It's the famous, you know, Brad Stevens saying. And Missoula's given him that chance. You know, I like that there's credit that, you know, I think it could be utilized differently, as you talked about. There's different ways to go about it, so you can accentuate everybody's strength with whatever that lineup is that's on the court. But he's getting a chance. And I think with Peyton Pritchard, with him getting that new deal, with, you know, if there's a move to be made either this year or even next year, because he's going to be that one salary that goes from 4 to 8 million, like, Peyton Pritchard has to be able to showcase something. So I think for multiple reasons, he has to be a guy that's allowed this opportunity. So I'm comfortable with him having the opportunity. I think we start having this conversation 10, 15 games from now, or maybe, you know, January, mid-January, and it's looking like this, then it's a lot more. All right, what if we threw in, you know, a protected first in 2 seconds? Maybe we have that Caruso conversation again. I'm much more leaning down that road. But I think for right now, I'm comfortable with the opportunity.
I think I want to just point out as well that we've seen Pritchard be better than this before.
That's also
like we've seen him make a bigger impact. And as Will said, like, we're still only, what are we, 11 games into the season?
I think we're out of small sample size and into just sample size. We have a sample. Like, this is a sample size. It's not just small. It's a sample. It's full sample.
It's a good sample. Like, we've got a sample now, but at the same time, there's a lot of other players in the NBA right now that have started the season in a slump. Across the league, there are players that are usually a lot better than what they are, and everybody's willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they're going to figure it out by the time they hit 15, 20 games in the season. Pritchard has already started to figure things out to a little extent. Like, he's not as bad as he was at the very start of this season. And I'm willing to give him until we get to that 20, 25 game mark before I run the, like, come to a definitive opinion of, yo, they got to bounce this dude, because if you need him in the playoffs, it's a problem. Or, no, we're completely fine with him. I think that 11 games is just too quick to make a decision like that.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think my question is just more like with Will's phrasing of being comfortable with the top three on the bench. I just wanted to clarify on that. And then with Pritchard, I agree. Like, I do think that he deserves this opportunity. And I think he's shown himself to be such an elite shooter in the past that we can look at these numbers as a shooting slump, as Adam was talking about. He's in a slump right now, and he's trying to shoot himself out of it. But he need, like, if we're halfway through the season, if it's trade deadline and Peyton Pritchard just, like, can't find his shot, You can't just say, hey, Peyton Pritchard's going to figure it out. Well, he had 40 games to figure it out, and he didn't figure it out.
Yeah, he's got to go.
Yeah, so, like, that's the big thing with Pritchard, and this is the thing that I keep saying. You know, everyone on Twitter that's like, Pritchard's doing all the little things on the court, and I agree. I like that Peyton Pritchard is a dog, as Drew Holiday calls him, and he gets offensive rebounds, and he can fight on a switch, and he can dig into a big man's legs if he has to, you know, stop a rolling big down the paint. But there's, you know, Peyton Pritchard's on the court to shoot the ball, and if he can't figure out his shot this year, then unfortunately the stakes are too high, right, for the Celtics to be like, oh, we're going to be okay with Peyton Pritchard. The goal is to win a championship. If Peyton Pritchard is not helping you get to that, if he's not going to definitively be in your playoff rotation, you need to go get a guy like a Caruso who would 100% be in the playoff rotation. But I'm cool waiting on that to figure it out with Pritchard, because I do believe in him. I really like him as a player.
So, question, do you think that Caruso is still available by the time we get to February?
Probably not, to be honest.
That's the question, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I say you got to start asking these questions now, right? Mm-hmm. Because you got to, if you're Brad Stevens, you know, or however, you know, as if I know how the fucking GM whisperers make this happen. But, you know, as they got their little ravens out there that are, you know, getting them the little whispers back, like, hey, it's time. Like, we got to make our offer. Like, you got to be ready to do so. I mean, but that, I mean, the Bulls team, and we'll see the Bulls here when we talk about the in-season tournament that's coming up here. When we talk about that here in a little bit, you know, like, they're on the edge of breaking this up, as they should. Like, they need a full teardown. Like, that's the one thing the Bulls can't do here is like, kind of put one foot in and maybe trade one guy. It's like they need a full teardown to go ahead and rebuild whatever it is they're trying to do. So, you know, I think you got to be prepared. I would be shocked if this played out till February. But then again, Caruso could be the guy that they hold on to the latest, just because I think he could get a really interesting bidding war. He can kind of be what I thought Rob Williams might be for the Blazers if he were able to stay healthy, where you're going to have a bunch of contenders that can get to that, you know, $9, $10, $11 million. And then all of a sudden they're like, okay, here's two first round picks that you're probably not going to get right now. But if you hold on a little bit more to the deadline, create a bidding war, that could happen. So there is a world where I think there that he could still be available in February.
One last Caruso question, because I do really want to hear about your experience at TD Garden at the first ever NBA in-season tournament game, Will. Think about how we got Drew Holiday, right? And when we got Drew Holiday, one of the biggest things in getting Drew Holiday was that we were also keeping him away from a team like Miami, right? So if right. Alex Caruso,
which, by the way, that's the first team I thought about for a contender going to get Caruso. It's like, this feels like the most Miami move of all time.
Right. So if Caruso were to go to a Milwaukee Bucks, if Caruso were to go to a Miami Heat, you know, is that cost of Caruso going there worth giving up on Pritchard early? You know, and putting those picks. Because if you get Caruso, the Heat are like, God damn it. They got Jrue Holiday and Alex Caruso, two guys that would have solidified our hopes of another title run. The Bucks need a point of attack defender. The Bucks are not good right now. Everyone's saying they're going to figure it out. The Bucks are not good at basketball right now. They do not look good at all. So, like, they need an Alex Caruso. I don't know. I'm not sure what they have to offer. I don't know everyone's pick status. But I do think that's the other thing to consider is, if we get Alex Caruso, is it worth getting him to keep him away from the other guys in the East?
No, I think that's a good point. Like you said, that was a massive part of that Jrue Holiday deal that, you know, that goes within the context of that trade. It's not written down anywhere in any ledger, but that is a massive part of that. Let's take one more break here. And then, guys, it's in-season tournament Friday. Can you feel it? Can you feel it? It's coming up next.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, so it is in-season tournament Friday, and you know, for that, I got a little special treat for you guys. Anytime we talk about the in-season tournament going forward, in-season, oh wait, damn it. Had it on loop. Almost nailed it.
What is this music?
It's the in-season tournament, man. Can you not feel it?
Oh my God.
This is what happens, man. The NBA, they got me, man. Get me in the building for one in-season tournament game, and I'm in.
Wait, is that actual NBA sponsored music?
For what?
For the tournament, or is that just some loop you found?
For the in-season tournament? Yeah, that's it, baby. Yeah, they sent it to me, you know, privately. They were like, man, we knew that you weren't against it. You were a borderline skeptic. And now you're all in. Get more in-season intensity. And they sent me the theme music.
Unbelievable.
Oh God. Yeah. So let's go, baby. Let's go. In-season tournament. Greg, as you mentioned, I was there in person for the first in-season tournament game for the Celtics, which, by the way. There we go. We can't do it all the time here, but that will be moving forward here on in-season tournament recording days. That will be the theme music that we have. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun time, man. Listen, in-season tournament, I'm not ready to jump on the Greg, these are going to be big games bandwagon yet, but I'm there with everything else. Listen, it's fun. It's getting conversation going. I will tell you this. When I was home, I had 3 to 4 different, you know, kind of casual NBA fans come up to me, and that was like one of the first things, like, can you explain the in-season tournament to me? So it's generating conversation. At the very least, the NBA is doing a good job. Now, as far as people beyond asking the question of can you explain it, are they actually getting hooked into it? I think that's another level to it. But I do got to say, it is fun having this. And of course, you know, I have a question for you guys. The intensity that we see in the Timberwolves and the Golden State Warriors coming out in fisticuffs. Do you think that's all brought about because of the in-season tournament?
I mean, I asked this on Twitter, right? And everybody's answer was no. And I'm like, no, I think it is a little bit. I get it. There's a little bit of animosity between the two teams after they played each other a few days before. There was some chirping. Obviously, the Timberwolves are really, really good to begin the season. The Warriors are sliding. I'm all team Draymond in terms of, yo, Rudy deserved that shit. I'm kind of there where I'm like, I think that we are seeing more more intensity because everybody, there's a 500k prize pool, man. I don't care how rich you are. I don't care how much money you make. 500k is 500k. And I think all of these guys want to win that. Being the first team to ever win that as well and creating that little bit of history, I think that carries a little bit of weight for guys that, you know, care about legacy. So, yeah, man, I think that we are seeing a little bit more intensity, but I don't believe that that's why Draymond Green decided to go full Anderson Silva.
Yeah, there's some great threads about the history of Draymond Green and Rudy Gobert out there on the interweb, so I recommend you check those out.
I mean, you know my thoughts on this, Will. I think this is great for the NBA. I was actually out in Austin, Texas, at a bar, watching the NBA in-season tournament. And I was out at a bar, 34 years old, out there living my life. And this one guy comes up next to me, and we just chopping it up about the game. And then I'm like, so are you watching this because it's a tournament? I just asked him, and he was like, oh, what's the in-season tournament? I was like, what do you think of this court? And he was like, oh, that's kind of cool. And I kind of explained to him what was going on. And I sold him on it. You know, I was able, I had my elevator pitch ready. By the end of it, he was like, so when are these games? I was like, Tuesdays and Fridays, bro. Just tune in Tuesdays and Fridays to the NBA in-season tournament.
One of us has got to do the fishes.
But no, I'm so in on this. And you know, I consume a lot of basketball podcasts as well, and it seems like even the bigger names that were kind of anti-tournament are starting to come around to it because it's just fun. It is different.
Fun. I can't deny that. It's fun.
It's fun, and it's different, man. And that's all that matters. Even if the Final Four isn't quite as exciting as we want it to be, even if it's not the best teams that are in the Final Four, they're going to be in Las Vegas. It's going to be a vibe. We've been to Summer League games. Summer League games are just naturally competitive. I know it's guys trying to make their mark, but with everybody tuning into it and with all the discourse surrounding the tournament right now, those games are going to mean something. I can pretty definitively say that.
So one of the funny things right now, so we're recording this Friday morning. Celtics will play the Raptors in pool play tonight on Friday night. The Raptors are the only team yet to play a game. This is actually their first in-season tournament. Feels like the in-season tournament's been going on for, you know, 3 weeks. The Raptors somehow still have not played on a Tuesday or Friday this month. So this will be their first tournament game. Celtics 1-0 technically in the pole position here in Group C. I think there's I'm in on the fun. I think there's some tweaks that they can make to make it just a little bit more accessible, because I think, you know, the second question I got from someone I was explaining it to is, oh my God, dude, okay, like I'm kind of into this. I'm going to the, well, so this was on a Saturday. They're like, okay, I'm kind of into this. So the Celtics were playing the Raptors behind me. They were like, so is this a tournament game? I was like, no, but they're in our pool. Okay. So next time we play them, that just look for the court. That will be it. Okay. I'm going to the game on Monday. Is Monday going to be a tournament game? No, not a tournament game. But if they play on a Tuesday or a Friday, it's a tournament game. So I think there's some ways that they can make it a little bit more accessible. That it's just
people don't understand. It only falls on 2 days out of the week. I don't get that.
The whole thing is for casual fans that want to get more into it on like in October or November, as opposed to waiting till after the Super Bowl or whatever. Like, I think for those fans who are like into basketball and they're kind of keeping an eye on it, but you want to maybe pull their eyes a little bit more. Like, I think just making it the month of November, you know what I mean? Or making it something that's just like you're right. Is Tuesday and Friday a massive barrier of entry? No, but what do we do with every decision we make on the podcast? What's the least barrier of entry that we can do for someone to watch or consume our stuff? Is you make it less rules. You make it less clips. You make it less things you have to think about before going into it and just being like, okay, I got to check in today. You know, there might've been some pool games last night. Let me check what happened, where the standings at. Like, I think there's ways to do this, you know, especially where you're playing the same teams in the same time frame, but only certain games count. Like, just make it that month and just play those four teams, make it those 8 to 10 games or whatever. Like, I think there's ways to do it, but I see it more. I'm seeing it more and more with each passing pool game. The vision here, the in-season tournament. I want to ask you guys though, because I was there in the court. I'll be honest. Some of the courts work. Some of the courts, Adam, you said this one time. As long as it doesn't distract me from the basketball, I'm happy. I'll be honest. Some of them do distract from the basketball. I think some of them are that glaringly bad, especially on TV. Like some of the bright red and bright blue. Yeah. Like I do think that distracts from the basketball, and I think that's an issue that they need to figure out. The Celtics one. It was just weird not seeing the parquet in person, because it felt like the only time you ever go to the Garden and you don't see the parquet, and even then you probably still would see it, but would be if you go see a Harlem Globetrotter game or like a Big Three type event, you might see something different. So it was a little bit different. You eventually adjust to it because the Celtics court isn't terrible. But what are your guys' thoughts on the court so far? Because I know that's a big topic.
I think it's ridiculous that people care about the courts. It's fun. I don't understand all the people that
you don't think the bright blue and bright red ones are distracting?
Not really, man. I'm just watching.
I totally do. But
that's okay that you find it distracting. It's okay that I don't find it distracting.
Do you not care about the colorblind community, Greg?
I'm colorblind.
Apparently there's been a lot of reports colorblind people struggle to watch these games with the different colors.
Okay, I never considered.
I just watch the orange ball. As long as the orange ball is moving, I can figure the rest of the shit out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I just don't get the overall conversation around the courts being so controversial. Even the Garden not being the parquet. I get the historical implications of that or whatever, but I'm just I don't fucking care, man. It's just a game. Just enjoy the fucking game. that's where I'm at with it. I just think it's fun. So any conversation that we have around it, I'm just it's fun. Just accept it. Enjoy it. Why does it have to be controversial? I get the courts not being pleasant to the eye and it could be distracting to some people. I personally don't care. Adam, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't care. I like them. Make all games with different courts. I want jazzy courts. I want 90s courts, 80s courts.
That sounds so awful to me.
Yeah, you see, for me, it's more about the tournament has a bit of a personality to it now because of these courts. It's more than just giving it a name. Right? Oh, this game is for a mid-season tournament game. No, this game is...
By the way, it's still one of the funniest things that's what they walked away from all meetings with. All right, what should we call the in-season tournament? Should we just go with in-season tournament? Done. Moving on. The worst marketing meeting of all time.
But the courts make sense to me. It's easily defined. You tune into a game with a funky court, it's an in-season tournament game. You know what I mean? Some might be a bit ugly, but I feel like a lot of people are just bitching to bitch. Or they don't really like the change because they're very accustomed to watching games with standard courts. I personally like it. I've always liked when courts are a little bit more jazzy anyway. I'm down. I'd be happy if they made a playoff courts edition and all the courts in the playoffs were different. I'd be fine with that too. I'd like it if we started having tally charts on the court. So when it's a playoff series, there's tally charts for how many times a player got dunked on. changes everything.
I thought you were saying telecharts. I was I gotta ask Adam, what the fuck's a telechart? I got what you're saying here. Yeah, I don't know. I'm the old man yelling at the clouds here. Listen, I like that it's different. I do think some of them are distracting. I'll stay on my corner with that particular one, but I do think this is fun. I think it is fun bringing this back up, and I think as we get to these next couple of Tuesdays and Fridays, and when the in-season tournament hits. You can't help but just have some fun with it. So that's what I think we need to walk away from this with. In-season tournament, we're having fun. You should be having fun. Enjoy it. Celtics, Raptors, Friday night, it's going down. We'll keep you up to date with all the pool play coming up with our future episodes. But I think we've hit on everything we want to today. And you guys got something else that we didn't touch on today that you want to jump into before we sign off?
Are we saving you meeting Mike Gorman for next pod?
We can talk about that right now. Yeah, I mean,
No. Let's save it for next spot.
We'll save it. Okay. We'll save the meeting with the legend.
Tease
it.
Give me a good tease.
Next episode, we'll dive into myself meeting the legend of Dorchester himself, Mike Gorman. Me, the boys, Mike Gorman. It's a tale that you do not want to miss. So make sure you're tuned in and locked in with us here on Green with Envy. I'm Will Weir. We got Greg Menakis. We got Adam Taylor. As always, when the three-man weave unites, it is a special, special day. Greg, any final thoughts before we send the people out?
I just don't want my music to have to compete with the new in-season tournament music. So I don't even want to talk about the music that might play right now. But I'm going to play some music for my band down here in Austin, Texas. We have a big show tomorrow here in Austin. Will, I know you're sick. I'm assuming you won't be there.
TBD. We're going to try and test negative twice. If we do that, there's a chance we'll be there, but we gotta play it by ear. TBD cool. On the injury report.
So my parents are going to be in town, which is great. It's going to be the first time they'll have seen my band Black Sheep Optimus play live. So very excited about that. We're playing at this place called Factory on 5th Street as part of the Austin Studio Tour, which is a citywide event where there's just art galleries around the city and people can come through and support local artists. We're going to be in the back at Factory on 5th Street at 4:30 Central Time. And it's going to be dope, man. I can't wait for it. It's going to be fun.
Are we going to have some video clips we can share afterwards?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, we'll have some video.
Stay locked in.
We're not going on a Ferris wheel, right? We're not going on Ferris wheels.
No Ferris wheels.
Okay, good.
All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Green with Envy. Greg, did you decide what we're going to hear on the way out?
Yeah, we're going to hear Black Sheep Optimus, Get This High. Peace, everybody.
Peace.
Every time I get this high, I lose my mind. It don't take much no more until I hit the floor. Every time I get this high, it's you I find. It don't take much no more until I'm at your door.
You cut me to my core, baby. What can I say? You got me on the floor, you know I came to play. I know I shouldn't, but you seem to take my pain away. And every time I score, Jason Tatum fade away. I close my eyes and I'm floating your river.